Hey, January 11th, 2021, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael, and coming up in our program today, we'll be reading these articles. U.S. reports more than 100,000 daily COVID-19 hospitalizations for 40th straight day. Gilead expects remdesivir treatment to work on COVID variant, CEO says. Much of U.S. data to catch newest coronavirus variants is several months old. As the world begins its vaccination push, delayed rollouts draw criticism and concern. U.S. vaccine plan is not working, needs a reset, former FDA chief says. As Biden promises to hurry vaccines, a British experiment could be a test case. States increasingly dumping CDC recommendations and giving out coronavirus vaccines, analysis finds. Hospitals thought they'd see COVID-19 vaccine shortages. Sometimes they have to throw away doses. What to know about California's COVID crisis? 3/4 of COVID-19 patients experience symptoms 6 months later, Chinese study shows. And Texas announces sites for next COVID-19 shipment. We don't have any numbers for Midland or Odessa today, so we'll just begin with the Texas numbers. From the Texas Tribune, 1 in 5 hospital beds in Texas are now occupied by COVID-19 patients. Average new cases increased by 5,129 cases compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On January 10th, 12,952 new confirmed cases and 2,638 new probable cases were reported. Hospitalizations increased by 548 patients compared with a week ago. As of January 10th, 13,111 Texans are hospitalized for the coronavirus. Average new deaths increased by 74 deaths compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On January 10th, 186 new deaths were reported. And now we'll bring you some coronavirus briefs. As new coronavirus cases in the United States rise precipitously after the holidays, health experts are urging states and the federal government to speed up vaccine distribution, which has proved to be a logistical nightmare. In large metro areas, such as Boston, Washington, D.C., and Houston, we need to be vaccinating at least 10,000 people every day for the next 8 months to stay on target, vaccine expert Peter Hotez wrote for the Washington Post. We are not even close to that, he added. Former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb told CBS that the U.S. vaccine issues aren't about supply, they're about distribution. There are 40 million doses sitting on shelves right now, Gottlieb said, while states and the federal government point fingers about who's to blame for the slow rollout. We need to acknowledge that it's not working, Gottlieb said. Lawmakers who hunkered down together for safety while a pro-Trump mob attacked the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday may have been exposed to the coronavirus, according to the Office of Attending Physician. Chicago public schools are set to reopen for in-person learning today, but teachers are balking about the plan, and nearly 150 school nurses have objected on safety grounds. Chicago teachers face pay loss if they don't return. Ahead could be some of the worst days of the pandemic. England's chief medical officer, Chris Whitty, told the BBC, due to the spread of the new, highly transmissible variant of the virus, British officials hope to vaccinate most adults by the fall. Queen Elizabeth II and her husband Prince Philip received their first doses of the coronavirus vaccine on Saturday, Buckingham Palace said in a rare medical statement, apparently aimed to show royal support for the vaccination effort. Pfizer BioNTech aims to deliver 2 billion doses of COVID-19 vaccine globally by the end of this year. Los Angeles's Dodger Stadium will turn into a vaccination site. Pope Francis plans to get coronavirus vaccine, calling it ethical obligation. The World Health Organization team investigating the origins of the coronavirus pandemic will arrive in China later this week, China's National Health Commission announced on Monday. The WHO has said it welcomes China's announcement earlier today, which stated that a WHO team investigating the origins of COVID-19 would arrive in the country on Thursday. IOC member says it's far too early to panic about Tokyo Olympics amid coronavirus upsurge. Roughly 80% oppose holding Tokyo Olympics this summer, poll shows. Now here are some shorter articles. The U.S. has recorded more than 100,000 COVID hospitalizations for 40 days in a row, from CNN's Madeline Holcomb. With COVID-19 hospitalizations surpassing 100,000 for 40 days in a row, officials are trying to ramp up the pace of vaccinations across the United States. We really need to get this vaccine out more quickly because this is really our only tool, Dr. Scott Gottlieb, former commissioner of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, said on CBS's Face the Nation Sunday. On Sunday, 129,229 people were in U.S. hospitals with coronavirus, but the day marked only the sixth highest in pandemic history, according to the COVID Tracking Project. Experts have long said that the best defenses against surging cases are preventative measures like masks and social distancing, as well as widespread vaccination. So far, at least 22.1 million doses of coronavirus vaccines have been distributed, and nearly 6.7 million have made their way into patients' arms. Health officials had hoped to get 20 million people vaccinated at the start of the new year, but the administration of vaccines has undergone delays and roadblocks. We need to acknowledge that it's not working, Gottlieb said of the vaccination plan. We need to hit the reset and adopt a new strategy in trying to get that out to patients. Gottlieb's warning comes just days after the U.S. crossed a grim threshold for the first time, reporting more than 4,000 new COVID-19 deaths in a single day on Thursday. Since the pandemic began, more than 374,000 people have died in the U.S., and more than 22.4 million people have been infected, according to data from Johns Hopkins University. Gilead expects remdesivir treatment to work on COVID variant, CEO says, by Hamza Shaban, Washington Post. The antiviral drug remdesivir is likely to effectively treat variant strains of COVID-19, the head of drug maker Gilead Sciences said Monday. The company is testing the drug on new coronavirus variants first detected in Britain and South Africa to determine its efficacy. But Gilead has already found in laboratory tests that remdesivir maintains its effectiveness against 2,000 coronavirus strains, Chief Executive Daniel O'Day said. Remdesivir works at the source in the cell where the virus replicates, and what we know is, in these new variants, that part of the cell is not changing at all, in fact, O'Day said Monday during an interview on CNBC's Squawk Box. So we fully expect remdesivir to be effective against these new strains. Hospitalized patients with COVID-19 can receive remdesivir, which may shorten their recovery time. The Food and Drug Administration approved the drug last year under an emergency use authorization. The variant is believed to be more transmissible than the older strain, which may force more sick people into hospitals and increase the number of fatalities. And as countries rush to inoculate their populations, the spread of a more infectious coronavirus variant could dim the prospect of widespread immunity. Much of U.S. data to catch these newest coronavirus variants is several months old, from CNN's Elizabeth Cohen. As part of the hunt for new coronavirus variants, an international database shows the United States ranks 61st in how quickly virus samples are collected from patients, analyzed, and then posted online. Countries with far fewer resources, including Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, and Suriname, process samples more quickly than the U.S. does. It's pathetic, said Dr. Peter Hotez, a virologist at Baylor College of Medicine. The median number of days from the time a sample is collected from a patient's nose until the time its genetic sequence is posted on GISAID, an independent data sharing initiative, is 85 days, according to an analysis of GSED data by the Broad Institute of Harvard and the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. By the time you wait 85 days, a sequence can go from being a rare variant to being half of the circulation virus in a population, Hotez said. As the world begins its vaccination push, delayed rollouts draw criticism and concern. From CNN's Eliza McIntosh. Political leaders are promising that mass vaccination campaigns will see life return as normal as a more contagious variant of the coronavirus spreads across dozens of countries, adding urgency to the race to end the pandemic. But vaccination efforts are rolling out slower than promised, raising doubts about an imminent way out of the crisis. In nations where vaccines have been authorized, criticism is mounting over shortages and delays to getting shots into people's arms, and solutions devised to stretch supplies, from administering half doses to spreading out the time between the two doses, have raised concerns from some experts. Some governments are pointing the finger at manufacturers for bottlenecks, while vaccine developers say it's an issue of supply. Others cite complications with distribution plans and a lack of trained staff to administer shots. But most public health experts say the slow pace is the inevitable consequence of creating a new vaccine rollout in record time. U.S. vaccine plan is not working, needs a reset, former FDA chief says, by the Washington Post's Kim Bellware. The first phase of the largest immunization effort in American history is faltering, former Food and Drug Administration Commissioner Scott Gottlieb said on Sunday. During an appearance on CBS's Face the Nation, Gottlieb said the United States should hit the reset button on the current vaccination campaign and adopt a new strategy before the more contagious variants of the virus that are already spreading in the United States mature to the point they potentially weaken the vaccine's efficacy. Right now, there's 40 million doses sitting on a shelf somewhere. So the feds say it's with the states. The states say it's with the feds. It really doesn't matter to the patient who's not getting access to the injection, Gottlieb said. Just 2% of the U.S. population has been vaccinated since the FDA approved the first two vaccine candidates a month ago. The vaccine rollout has been plagued by logistical issues, underfunding in local health departments, and a lack of a unified federal strategy. The Trump administration has punted responsibility to the states, leaving them to work up the entire framework for how to get shots into arms. New York City's vaccination registration process is one example of the Byzantine process that many patients must navigate. Comptroller Scott Stringer criticized the city's health department Sunday for bewildering sign-up procedures, including a complex account registration and 51 question field. We can't force frontline workers and those over 75 to confront a bewildering sign-up process, Stringer said via Twitter. Any barrier to getting shots in arms is only going to prolong the agony of this crisis. The United States will have to vaccinate 1 million people a day if it wants to meet its goal of having 3/4 of the population inoculated by September, Peter Hotez, a professional studying molecular virology and microbiology at Baylor College of Medicine, said in a recent op-ed. Hotez encouraged the federal government to fund mass-scale vaccination efforts and streamline the clunky process. He stressed the benefit of inoculating as many people as quickly as possible with the first dose. As Biden promises to hurry vaccines, a British experiment could be a test case. By William Booth, Washington Post, London. Faced with soaring hospitalizations and deaths, Britain is launching a daring campaign to combat a ferociously infectious variant of the coronavirus by spacing the first and second doses of approved vaccines out over months instead of weeks. The full vaccine development plan will be published by the government Monday, but the difficult decision to alter the recommended vaccination schedules will apply to the entire population, including the elderly and healthcare workers. Without enough doses immediately available, public health officials are betting that crucial second injections of two approved vaccines can be pushed back from their recommended waiting intervals, 21 days for Pfizer and 28 days for AstraZeneca to 84 days for both. States increasingly dumping CDC recommendations in giving out coronavirus vaccines, analysis finds, from CNN's Maggie Fox. States are increasingly abandoning guidelines from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and taking their own approaches to giving people coronavirus vaccines, a new analysis finds. Overall, we find states are increasingly diverging from CDC guidance and from each other, suggesting that access to COVID-19 vaccine in these first months of the U.S. vaccine campaign may depend a great deal on where one lives. The nonprofit Kaiser Family Foundation, which studies healthcare policy, said in a report issued Monday. In addition, timelines vary significantly across states, regardless of priority group, resulting in a vaccine rollout labyrinth across the country. The report finds 40 states are still in phase 1A, either fully or partly. 10 states and Washington, D.C. are in phase 1B. Only Michigan has moved to at least part of phase 1C. While all states and Washington, D.C. are giving priority to healthcare workers and long-term care residents and staff in phase 1A of their plans as recommended, they are increasingly taking their own tacks in phase 1B and 1C of the rollout. 10 states and Washington, D.C. have moved to phase 1B. For phase 1B, the CDC recommends vaccinating people ages 75 and older and frontline essential workers, such as firefighters, postal workers, teachers, and others. For phase 1C, the CDC recommends vaccinating people ages 65 and older, younger people with high-risk conditions, and other essential workers. The Kaiser analysis found that 10 states have added first responders, including law enforcement and firefighters, the phase 1A. These states are Arkansas, Georgia, Indiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Nevada, New Hampshire, South Dakota, Virginia, and Wyoming. Utah added K through 12 teachers and childcare workers, while Louisiana limited healthcare workers to hospital staff only. Four states added seniors to the 1A group, people 65 and older in Georgia and Florida, 75 and up in Tennessee, and 80-plus in West Virginia. 14 states follow CDC advice precisely on who should be in Phase 1B, while 30 add extra age groups and others, including educators, prisoners, and the homeless. Hospitals thought they'd see COVID-19 vaccine shortages. Sometimes they have to throw away doses. From CNN's Jacqueline Howard and Jamie Gumbrecht. In some hospitals, healthcare centers, and pharmacies in the United States, there are vials of COVID-19 vaccines that aren't making it into arms. Out of the more than 22 million doses of vaccine that have been distributed to hospitals and pharmacies so far in the U.S., only about 6.7 million people have received their first dose, according to data from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. There's no one reason for the slow rollout or doses going unused. Experts say it was never going to be easy to begin a mass vaccination campaign during a pandemic. It takes time to vaccinate and monitor large numbers of people, and some facilities are staggering staff vaccinations to avoid having too many healthcare workers out at once. The supply and demand don't always line up. Some in the highest priority groups, healthcare workers and long-term care facility residents, don't want the vaccine, or at least not yet. At the same time, the American Medical Association on Friday said it was concerned that some healthcare workers not employed by hospitals or healthcare systems face difficulties accessing the vaccine. To speed up the process, the federal government is urging states to offer the vaccine to people who are older or in higher risk groups, but some areas are still focusing on the earliest priority groups, even if that means doses brought out of cold storage go unused. We all thought that the real problem was going to be a shortage. We would have lines out the door. And what we're finding is that, from what we hear nationally right now, there's still a lot of vaccine. Dr. Neil Kalman, president and CEO of the Institute for Family Health, a nonprofit health organization that includes the Family Health Center of Harlem, told CNN on Friday. Every dose that's in somebody's arm is somebody that's not going to get sick with COVID, he said. It's not doing any good trying to ration it out like this week by week, because any dose that's sitting in a refrigerator is a life that's not being potentially saved. California has been hit the hardest in recent weeks, and here's a short article giving some statistics about what's going on there. What to know about California's COVID crisis. California has recorded more than 2.6 million COVID-19 cases, and at least 29,701 Californians have died from the virus. The state continues to see a surge that's not slowing down. Here's what's happening in the Golden State. California set two records Saturday, the most deaths reported in one day, 695, and the most COVID-19 patients in intensive care units, 4,939. On Sunday, the state reported nearly 50,000 new cases and 468 deaths. In Los Angeles County, the worst hit part of California, there were 14,482 new cases and 166 new deaths Sunday. Some 7,964 patients with COVID-19 are being treated in Los Angeles hospitals, and 22% of those are in the ICU. Statewide, there are 22,513 patients in the hospital being treated for COVID-19 as of Sunday. Three-quarters of COVID-19 patients experience symptoms 6 months later, Chinese study shows, by the Washington Post's Gary Xie. Chinese researchers who conducted the largest study of the long-term health consequences of COVID-19 found that three-quarters of patients showed symptoms 6 months after being discharged from the hospital, with fatigue and muscle weakness prevalent. Sleep difficulties, kidney malfunction, anxiety, and depression were reported to be common as well. The study of 1,733 patients conducted at the Jin Yen Tan Hospital in Wuhan, China, the original epicenter of the outbreak, was published this month in The Lancet. The British Journal said the Jin Yen Tan Hospital study was the largest cohort study to date and had the longest follow-up period. The Chinese researchers essentially enrolled every one of the hospital's COVID-19 patients in the tracking study, except those who refused to participate, those who had other disqualifying conditions, or those who died or could not be reached. Researchers worldwide say the long-term effects of COVID-19, the disease caused by the novel coronavirus, are still not fully known. Anecdotal evidence and smaller or shorter studies suggest that COVID-19 may have a lasting impact on a patient's sense of taste and smell, among other things. The Chinese study, which included patient questionnaires, blood and pulmonary tests, and walking tests, found that 76% reported symptoms 6 months after being discharged. More than 60% reported fatigue and muscle weakness, while about a quarter reported sleep difficulties and hair loss. Anxiety and depression were also common and reported by 23% of subjects. Tests showed a considerable proportion of patients had poor lung function 6 months after being discharged. About 56% of patients who had the worst symptoms and needed a ventilator showed abnormal pulmonary diffusion capability after 6 months, while 22% of less severe cases, those who did not require supplemental oxygen, showed reduced lung diffusion. The study showed that researchers did not have baseline pulmonary function data to compare with the 6 months' results. These results should support that those with severe disease need post-discharge care. Longer follow-up studies in a larger population are necessary to understand the full spectrum of health consequences from COVID-19, the authors concluded. And finally, here's an article from the Texas Tribune. Texas announces sites for next COVID-19 vaccine shipment. State health officials said Sunday that 28 hubs will be getting 158,825 doses this week, by Patrick Svetik, published January 10th. Texas health officials on Sunday released a list of coronavirus vaccination hubs that will receive the state's next shipment of vaccines. These 28 hubs will get 158,825 doses of the vaccine this week, according to the Texas Department of State Health Services. Another 38,300 doses will go to other providers across the state. The number of doses that each provider is getting is based on its own estimate of how many people it could vaccinate in a week, DSHS said. These hubs are meant to streamline large-scale vaccination as Texas continues to prioritize vaccinating people who are healthcare workers, people who are 65 and older, and those with medical conditions that increase their risk. The 28 hubs for this week are located in some of the state's biggest metropolitan areas, as well as the Rio Grande Valley and more rural regions. In announcing the plan last week, DSHS said the hubs will be required to set up registration phone numbers and websites and to focus on the most vulnerable communities in their region. Contact information for the hubs can be found here, and I will read that in a moment. They list the 28 hubs followed by their county and how many doses they are receiving. And I'm scrolling down to look for West Texas region hubs. The first one I see is the City of Lubbock Health Department in Lubbock County. They will receive 5,000 doses. And that is the only West Texas county that I'm seeing here in our region that is receiving any of the vaccines this week in this hub system that the Texas Department of Health Services has set up. I will go ahead and give the phone number for Lubbock, as I'm seeing here that Midland, Odessa, Abilene, San Angelo, far west Texas counties, none of those cities are listed in this hub system. Lubbock is the only one. So I'm going to, in just a moment, give out the phone number for the City of Lubbock Health Department. They emphasize across this that they are asking not to just show up and to call or go online for more information about that particular hub. So here's the phone number for Lubbock. I'm going to give it twice. It is 806-775-2933. One more time, City of Lubbock Health Department, 806-775-2933. And with that, we wrap up our broadcast for today's coronavirus update from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael. Coming up next, we'll bring you a health publication that'll take us to 2 o'clock. And then after that, we'll bring you USA Today with national news. 3 o'clock brings our local news broadcast. And I'm glancing over the local newspaper's front pages to bring you some of the articles that our volunteers will be reading today. Of course, the Midland Reporter Telegram has only published a Saturday edition, as they're not publishing on Sundays and Mondays anymore. So here are some articles from that front page of Saturday's MRT. MMH says doctors shouldn't prescribe inhaled steroids. Capital. Jenny Cudd says Capitol riots were not what is being portrayed. Candidates continue. MISD says superintendent search goes to second round. From the Odessa American. Officer-involved shooting. Traffic stop leads to officer-involved shooting. Woman arrested, taken to Ector County Jail. Food bank continues operations. COVID and money woes nagging Texas representatives. Biennial session opens Tuesday in Austin. Total loss. Monahan's trooper and family look to rebuild after house fire. Snow blankets basin, second time in less than a week. Those are some of the stories our volunteers will be reading at 3 o'clock. At 6, more news with the Wall Street Journal, and we'll be back tomorrow afternoon at 1. As always, thank you for joining us today. Be well and have a great day.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area.
It's 35 and mostly cloudy. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the low 30s. Then tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high in the mid 40s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid 30s.
From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by GARS, the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Hello, I'm Allison Ramsey, and this is Health Magazine. Today, I'll be reading from health.com. The first story is the best and worst diets for 2021, according to experts. U.S. News and World Report's annual list just came out. Here are the top diets, plus a few stinkers unlikely to be healthy and sustainable. By Cynthia Sass, MPH, RD. Posted on January 4, 2021. U.S. News and World Report just released their Best Diets of 2021 list, generated annually by a panel of experts who evaluate modern and popular diets based on safety, how easy the plan is to follow, nutritional value, and how effective the diet is for weight loss. The best diets of 2021 also have to be effective at preventing diabetes and heart disease, and evidence of these outcomes via published studies weighed heavily in their rankings. Here are the five top diets and my thoughts on each as a registered dietitian. 1. Mediterranean diet. I fully expected the Mediterranean diet to rate at the top again this year. The eating pattern has long been considered the gold standard for nutrition, disease prevention, wellness, and longevity. The Mediterranean diet is rich in vegetables, fruits, fish, nuts, pulses, beans, lentils, peas, chickpeas, and olive oil. It severely limits processed foods and sugar, as well as red meat, and naturally provides a wide range of anti-inflammatory antioxidants. Numerous studies have shown that people who live in countries that border the Mediterranean Sea and continue to eat the region's traditional diet live longer and have lower rates of chronic diseases, including heart disease, which remains the top killer of both men and women in the U.S. It has also been shown to support better sleep quality and guard against depression. The Mediterranean diet is nutritionally balanced and provides a diverse array of satiating foods and flavors. However, it is an eating style, not a rules-oriented diet. As such, there are no guidelines for specific portions, calorie targets, or meal configurations. That said, you may lose weight simply by shifting your intake away from processed foods toward more fiber and nutrient-rich produce and whole foods. Number 2. Thai DASH Diet. Tied for number 2 is the DASH Diet. DASH is an acronym for Dietary Approaches to Stop Hypertension. But it's not only for people with high blood pressure. DASH is promoted by the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, which is part of the National Institutes of Health, NIH. This plan borrows elements of the Mediterranean diet, but it's a very specific eating pattern that's been highly researched. In addition to being effective for reducing blood pressure, DASH has been shown in studies to promote weight loss, protect heart health, as well as lower the risk of type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, and certain cancers. DASH recommends specific portions from various food groups depending on one's daily calorie needs. DASH has actually been in existence for over 2 decades, and I've counseled many people about how to follow the plan. It's fairly straightforward, and while rates of weight loss with DASH can be slow, it's sustainable long term. My one issue is the lack of obvious alternatives to animal protein for those who are looking for a plant-based plan. It's also a bit lower in healthful fats than I typically recommend. 2. Tide flexitarian diet. A flexitarian diet is primarily vegetarian with the occasional inclusion of meat or fish. Numerous studies have shown that the shift towards a mostly plant-based diet is tied to lower body weight and a reduced incidence of chronic diseases, including improved markers of metabolic health, blood pressure, and reduced risk of type 2 diabetes. There is no one way to follow a flexitarian diet. As far as the number of times per week animal products are consumed and the overall makeup of a day's worth of meals in regards to serving of produce, whole grains, etc. The best way to follow this plan is to maximize your intake of whole plant foods and minimize highly processed foods, even if they are fully plant-based. Opt for dishes like a grain bowl made with leafy greens, veggies, quinoa, lentils, and tahini over a vegan cheeseburger with fries. 4. WW, formerly Weight Watchers, diet. WW ranks highly because it is well-researched, long-standing, and not extreme in its approach. The newer version is also set up in a different way, with options for how to follow the plan based on members' food and lifestyle preferences. WW members can also access personal coaches, an app, trackers, recipes, fitness info, and a 24/7 chat service. There is even an option for those who want to build healthy habits without focusing on weight loss. The WW plan is customizable, and unlike old-school commercial weight loss programs, no food purchases are required. One potential downside can be the cost, which varies based on the chosen plan, but can be as much as $54.95 a month, plus a $20 starter fee. In my experience, WW can work well for people who thrive when they're part of community, like to use digital tools, and prefer an eating plan that provides structure but allows for flexible choices. 5. Thai, Mayo Clinic Diet. The Mayo Clinic diet is from the highly esteemed American Academic Medical Center and is focused on integrated health care, education, and research. The diet, which is supported by a book and website, are based on research-backed, tried-and-true health habits. There is a strong emphasis on fitting in 30 minutes of physical activity most days of the week, eating more whole foods, including veggies, fruits, whole grains, and healthy fats, and limiting sugar to what's naturally found in fruit. The plan includes two phases, lose it and live it. The first emphasizes 15 key habits to focus on and which ones to eliminate without counting calories. After 2 weeks, the next phase involves identifying how many calories you should aim for to either lose or maintain weight, and how to consume your calories in a healthful, balanced way. No foods are completely off limits, though, as the diet stresses a long-term, maintainable lifestyle approach. A digital version of the program is offered for $5 per month, which promises to help you eat well, get moving, track healthy habits, and stay motivated. It includes personalized meal plans, recipes, portion control guides, motivational tips, food and fitness journals, habit trackers, walking and running guides, and fitness tips for all levels. The site also features success stories that include both men and women who have shed pounds and improved their health by following the plan. 5. Thai, Mind Diet. The Mind Diet combines aspects of the Mediterranean diet and the DASH diet to create an eating pattern designed to focus on brain health, including the prevention of dementia and age-related cognitive decline. But the Mind Diet can be followed by anyone for weight loss and overall wellness. MIND specifically stands for the Mediterranean DASH Intervention for Neurodegenerative Delay. Because both the Mediterranean diet and the DASH diet have such strong research to support their healthfulness, Mind highlights aspects of the two that are particularly protective to the brain. Rather than a set meal plan, Mind's primary directive is to eat more of 10 brain-defending foods, such as green leafy vegetables, nuts, berries, beans, olive oil, whole grains, fish, poultry, and wine. No more than one glass daily, preferably red. The plan also lays out 5 foods to avoid, which have been shown to hinder brain health: butter and margarine, cheese, red meat, fried food, and pastries and sweets. Since Mind is newer than both the Mediterranean diet and DASH, there are fewer studies on its outcomes. However, the published research is impressive. In one study of nearly 1,000 older adults, those who followed the Mind diet most closely had a 53% lower risk of developing Alzheimer's disease compared to those who deviated from it most. One downside of the diet is understanding how to transform the guidelines into concrete meal plans and recipes. Books and online resources can help, but customizing the plan to your eating preferences and weight loss goals may require some expert guidance. Diets that ranked poorly. The diets that rated the lowest included the Dukan diet in last place and the keto diet as second to last. While these plans may result in initial weight loss, they lose points for their restrictiveness, potential nutrient deficiencies, and lack of research on long-term effectiveness and health outcomes. These are important points to take into account if you're considering adopting a new diet. In my experience counseling many people over the years, I have come to a few solid conclusions. First, if a diet helps you lose weight but compromises your physical or emotional well-being, it's not a healthy, sustainable option. Second, keeping weight off is about developing habits you can stick with long-term. If you can't realistically see yourself following a given plan 6 months or a year down the road, it's probably not the right approach for you. Finally, weight management and health aren't about being perfect or strict. The ultimate formula is really about balance. That concept is not as sexy as a trendy new diet, but it's the ultimate win-win for weight loss and wellness. Cynthia Sass, MPH, RD, is Health's contributing nutrition editor, a New York Times best-selling author, and a private practice performance nutritionist who has consulted for 5 professional sports teams. That story was The Best and Worst Diets for 2021, According to Experts, by Cynthia Sass, MPH, RD, posted on January 4th, 2021. The next story is, if you've already had COVID-19, do you need the vaccine? Here's what experts say. With more than 17 million cases so far in the U.S., a lot of people are asking this question. By Claire Gillespie, posted on December 17, 2020. The first COVID-19 vaccine shots in the U.S. were administered on December 14th to high-risk healthcare workers, marking the start of an ambitious immunization program that aims to give every American the option of receiving the vaccine. But what about people who've already been infected with COVID-19? Should they also get the vaccine? According to the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, ACIP, the independent committee that advises the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, on how best to control vaccine-preventable diseases in the U.S., a previous COVID-19 infection shouldn't rule out a person from getting the vaccine. In a slide presentation for a CDC meeting on December 12, the committee noted that data from clinical trials suggests that vaccination is safe and likely efficacious in people who have previously been infected with COVID-19, whether they displayed symptoms or not. But don't people who've had COVID-19 have immunity? Yes, sometimes. The problem is that the level of immunity, as determined by the level of antibodies, varies greatly between people who've been previously infected. Stephen Russell, MD, PhD, CEO, and co-founder of Immanis Life Sciences, tells Health. Higher levels of neutralizing antibodies provide better protection against new infection, explains Dr. Russell. More severe symptoms of infection often lead to higher levels of neutralizing antibodies, while less severe symptoms may lead to lower or no measurable neutralizing antibody production. In other words, if you had a very mild COVID-19 infection, your immune system may not have formed enough antibodies. And the same can be true for those who experienced a more severe form of the disease. A study published in Frontiers in Immunology in May 2020 found that the COVID-19 infection was so overpowering in hospitalized patients that their immune response became exhausted, and immune memory to the virus wasn't adequately formed. More evidence is needed to determine the risk of reinfection in previously infected people, as well as how long their protective immunity lasts. One possible scenario is that a booster vaccine will be given to previously infected people 6 months after their original episode of COVID-19. But first, we need more information on the speed at which immunity declines after natural infection, Dr. Russell says. He adds that protection and immunity due to neutralizing antibodies may weaken and eventually disappear over time. Significant reductions in neutralizing antibodies are seen even within the first few months after recovery from a COVID-19 infection, he says. This suggests that vaccination could be beneficial, regardless of whether you had a mild or severe form of COVID-19. How does a vaccine affect people who've already had COVID-19? So far, vaccine trials have concentrated on people who haven't been exposed to COVID-19, so it's still unclear what the effect of vaccination will be on those who have been exposed. The COVID-19 vaccine triggers an immune response in the spike protein, the red broccoli stalk-like projections as depicted on the surface of each virus that we can measure by looking for COVID-19 antibodies after vaccination. Charles Bailey, MD, Medical Director for Infection Prevention at Providence St. Joseph Hospital and Providence Mission Hospital in Orange County, California, tells Health. These antibodies should be protective for a period of time by preventing or lessening symptoms of a subsequent COVID-19 infection, Dr. Bailey explains. And while period of time isn't well defined right now, he says it's likely to be at least 3 months and maybe much longer. When people who've already had COVID-19 get vaccinated, their immunity is effectively topped up, meaning they're hopefully protected for longer. And even after people have been vaccinated, it's possible they'll need additional booster doses to keep their immunity up. Discussions are ongoing regarding the possible need for high-risk individuals to receive booster vaccinations every 6 or 12 months, but more data is needed before we have clarity on this question, Dr. Russell says. What if you have COVID-19 when you're due to get the vaccine? The ACIP recommends that vaccination should be deferred until you've recovered from acute illness, if you're experiencing symptoms, and you've completed the isolation period. For most people, that's 10 days after the onset of symptoms, provided there's been no fever for at least 24 hours, per CDC guidelines. The committee also notes that current evidence suggests that COVID-19 reinfection is uncommon in the 90 days after initial infection. So people with documented acute infection in the preceding 90 days may delay the vaccine until the end of this period if they wish. Is there a way to test how long immunity to COVID lasts? Yes. By repeatedly measuring patients' neutralizing antibodies. We can do this every few months using a quantitative neutralizing antibody test, such as a PRNT or ImmunoCOV, Dr. Russell says. These tests measure virus neutralizing antibodies, the ones that can stop SARS-CoV-2 infection from taking hold and spreading in the body, and evaluate the level, thereby assessing the strength and durability of the person's immunity to COVID-19 over time. This could be a helpful way of prioritizing vaccine distribution while supplies are limited, Dr. Russell adds. Vulnerable people with the lowest antibody levels could go to the front of the line. The information in this story is accurate as of press time. However, as the situation surrounding COVID-19 continues to evolve, it's possible that some data have changed since publication. While Health is trying to keep our stories as up-to-date as possible, we also encourage readers to stay informed on news and recommendations for their own communities by using the CDC, WHO, and their local public health departments as resources. That story was, if you've already had COVID-19, do you need the vaccine? Here's what experts say. By Claire Gillespie, posted on December 17, 2020. The next story is the 5 best toothpaste for sensitive teeth, according to reviews. Raise Your Hand If Eating Ice Cream Is Painful, by Maggie O'Neill, posted on December 31, 2020. Each product we feature has been independently selected and reviewed by our editorial team. If you make a purchase using the links included, we may earn commission. Many people suffer from sensitive teeth. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention puts the figure somewhere between 15% and 30% of U.S. adults with natural permanent teeth. Suffering from sensitive teeth can look different depending on how severe a person's case is. Sometimes those with sensitive teeth experience mild pain when, for example, eating ice cream, while others experience severe discomfort, according to the Oral Health Foundation. And interestingly enough, women are more likely than men to suffer from sensitive teeth, as are people aged 20 to 40, per the Oral Health Foundation. Why? According to the American Dental Association, female hormones cause greater blood flow to the gums, which causes them to be more sensitive. The causes of sensitive teeth vary as well. Eunjung Jo, DDS, a dentist at Astra Smile Dental in New York City, tells Health. Sensitive teeth are typically the result of worn tooth enamel and gum recession, Dr. Jo says. Sometimes, however, tooth discomfort is caused by other factors such as a cavity, a cracked or chipped tooth, a worn filling, or gum disease. This is why thorough and regular dental checkups are necessary for good oral health, Dr. Jo adds. Fortunately, there are ways to lessen the symptoms of tooth sensitivity, both at the dentist's office and at home. One such way is to pay attention to the type of toothpaste you're using, since some are better than others for those with sensitive teeth. Two specific ingredients to look for are potassium nitrate and stannous fluoride. Toothpaste with potassium nitrate soothes the nerves inside your teeth, preventing them from sending pain signals from triggers, like a burst of cold air or hot coffee, Dr. Jo says. Toothpaste with stannous fluoride work like a shield to protect the exposed, soft inner part of the tooth called dentin, she adds. The shield works to keep pain-causing agents like cold soda from getting to the nerves inside your teeth and thus causing pain, Dr. Jo explains. Below, you'll find five toothpastes designed to help people with sensitive teeth. Sensodyne Rapid Relief Toothpaste. This Sensodyne toothpaste can help with sensitivity pain in 3 days, as long as you're brushing regularly. Is the one Dr. Jo recommends to patients who suffer from sensitive teeth. As an added bonus, it also removes tooth stains and fights cavities. One Amazon reviewer wrote, "After about 3 weeks of using this, I definitely noticed less sensitivity in most of my teeth. I used to not be able to drink cold liquids or eat cold foods during the summer, which was always a bummer during the super hot months. This has really helped me eat and drink almost like I used to. I'll definitely be buying this again. To buy, Sensodyne Rapid Relief Toothpaste, $5, was $6, Amazon.com. Colgate Sensitive Toothpaste, Complete Protection. This Colgate toothpaste features potassium nitrate, one of the two ingredients that fights tooth sensitivity pain and removes plaque. Also great, it's ranked in nearly 3,000 five-star ratings from Amazon customers who tout it for being very effective at reducing sensitivity to cold. I've been using this toothpaste for a month, and thankfully, it really does work. The sensitivity to cold in my teeth has decreased considerably, noted a shopper. To buy, Colgate Sensitive Toothpaste Complete Protection, $13 for three, was $18, Amazon.com. Arm & Hammer Sensitive Teeth and Gums Toothpaste. Also featuring potassium nitrate, this toothpaste strengthens enamel and, thanks to the baking soda, whitens your teeth. Worth noting, this toothpaste has earned nearly all 5-star ratings on Amazon. It has a 4.8 rating to be exact, so you really can't go wrong. I used to only use the regular Arm & Hammer whitening toothpaste, but began to have tooth and gum pain, said one 5-star reviewer. I found the sensitive version and haven't had any pain since. To buy, Arm & Hammer Sensitive Teeth and Gums Toothpaste, $21 for four, Amazon.com. Parodontax Complete Protection Toothpaste. This option includes stannous fluoride, the other ingredient that fights tooth sensitivity pain, and it treats gingivitis and helps prevent cavities. With over 1,400 five-star ratings, shoppers say it conquers bad breath, minimizes bleeding gums, and is well worth the price tag since it really works to relieve tooth sensitivity. My gums always bleed when I brush my teeth, and I also have sensitivity. This toothpaste works wonders and even tastes great, raves a customer. To buy, Parodontax Complete Protection Toothpaste, $16 for three, Amazon.com. Aquafresh Sensitive Toothpaste. Aquafresh's toothpaste for sensitive teeth features potassium nitrate and helps strengthen your teeth, keeps your gums healthy, and fights cavities. Many users state they've been brushing with the sensitive paste for years, and while it's apparently hard to find in stores, they love it so much they keep returning to Amazon to buy it whenever they're running low. One reviewer wrote, I purchased this style of toothpaste many years ago at the suggestion of my dentist. I have very sensitive teeth and gums, and he suggested this sensitive toothpaste as a way not only to clean my teeth, but to build up the resistance of my teeth. I have used Aquafresh exclusively and now have very pleasant dental visits. I highly recommend this toothpaste, especially for those of you with sensitive teeth. To buy Aquafresh Sensitive Toothpaste, $12 for four, was $17, Amazon.com. That story was The 5 Best Toothpaste for Sensitive Teeth According to Reviews by Maggie O'Neill, posted on December 31st, 2020 on health.com. That concludes today's readings of Health Magazine. This has been Allison Ramsey for the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening to GARS.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area.
It's 35 and mostly cloudy. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the low 30s. Then tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high in the mid-40s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s.
From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 2 p.m.
Hello, this is Melanie, and I'm reading articles from today's USA Today, Monday, January 11th, 2021. Starting with the money section, no money line column today, but here's the first main article. Stimulus money sent to the wrong accounts. This by Jessica Menton. Millions of TurboTax and H&R Block customers say their stimulus checks were deposited in the wrong bank accounts this week, forcing many of them to wait even longer for the badly needed aid after struggling financially